Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
I mean, no one plans to get sick, and yet, here we are. My name is Matthew Zachary. A quarter century ago, I was given 6 months to live with a diagnosis of terminal brain cancer. For more than 15 years, I've been ranting and raving on the air about stupid cancer and now stupid healthcare, and I'm just getting warmed up. So let's all go make healthcare suck less together, because you know what? We're all out of patience. Hey, that's the name of the show. You know that feeling when you meet somebody for the first time and you're like, A, how the hell have I never known you? And B, are we somehow related? And maybe C, can we be best friends right now? Well, that's what happened when I met Gail Zotz at a conference in Miami for the first time. We'd been sort of in each other's orbit for a couple of years, but never really connected. And that's what happened in Miami. You're like, we're family. I don't even know you 10 minutes and we're family. That it was right there. So of course, what happened next? She came to New York, to the studio, for 4 hours. And we just, in Yiddish, we say spazziert. We just shot the shit and had just this like event horizon of common threads and opportunities, the least of which being we're both graduates of SUNY Binghamton. And yes, I say SUNY Binghamton and not Binghamton University. You're welcome. Today's episode with Gail is long. It's three segments because I just couldn't contain my enthusiasm and her energy into just 30 minutes. And I hope you make the time to listen to the whole episode in any permutation you can. We didn't just perseverate on the 80s and the 90s, the simplicity of the internet before the internet. How can you have the right amount of angry? But she's got this incredible backstory that has nothing to do with her insanely ridiculous cancer story, which is how we met. But that doesn't define her. She spent the 90s, after graduating from Binghamton, in old school traditional broadcast media, television, on-air correspondent, direct camera work. This was exactly what journalism and broadcasting was back then, and she was right there. But the true saga of Gail began when she was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer and pretty much treated in the worst way possible. I've never really used the term cancer jail, but basically she lived in cancer jail for 6 years. You're going to hear a lot of jargon around value-based care, and I just play the idiot. What the hell is value-based care? But at the end, I think it makes sense, and I want to spend more time talking about it here on the show. So with all that said, prepare yourself. Prepare yourself for everything that is Gail Zotz. Let's get started. All right, I'm staring at Gail Zotz, literally here in my studio, and I'm kind of beside myself because I'm staring at Gail Zotz. You have been like the spotted owl of my career. Like, I've known of you, I've seen of you, I've seen photos of you, and we finally met last week.
Which is crazy.
In Miami.
I know. It really feels like we've like should have known each other for years.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm so excited.
Yeah, I mean, you could still stare at me. You know, I mean, yeah.
You should have video on
that's
this.
That's fine. We'll throw a camera up in the, we'll have a spy cam on the corner, closed circuit television.
You gotta do it. Really behind the scenes.
Totally behind the scenes. It's like the Inside Edition, MTV Unplugged version of the show.
Yeah, exactly. I will run it on YouTube.
Honestly, like I said before the show, like we've been in this sliding doors world. I mean, you're technically 5 years into this. I'm 26 years into this, but the Welcome to Shit Happens Club that this has evolved into since I even joined it by accident 26 years ago, among the million things we have in common.
Yes.
We're starting with Binghamton.
Okay.
And Wegmans.
Which is crazy.
I mean, how many cancer survivors can you meet that went to your alum? That's the nichest of the niche market.
We're a new brand.
We are.
We're like, yeah.
Were you Colonials or was it Bearcats by then?
Is that a trick question?
Well, Colonials was like the football team, and then they became Bearcats. So what the fuck is a Bearcat?
We didn't have a football team.
Binghamton had a football team.
Binghamton didn't have a football team.
It was the
team.
Colonials.
No, you're making that up. There was no football team.
You were like a theater person, weren't you, like me?
Maybe.
Yeah.
And ice hockey.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I love ice hockey.
All right, so the Colonials were what they were, but they became the Bearcats.
I don't think there was a football team.
Just out of random coincidence, so when I was, adrift in the sea of what the fuckery in the 90s after I was, like, told go home and you'll be fine when I had no idea if I was going to live.
Right.
My first peer, the first human I met who, like, oh, my God, I'm not alone. Talk about, like, dogmatic coincidence. Not only was he bald, Jewish, from New York City, and had brain cancer in his 20s, he's a Binghamton alumni.
We're a club!
Yes.
There's three of us now.
Yes, there's three of us now.
Oh, my gosh, this is so exciting.
Yeah, and he was in the acapella group. He was the Binghamton Crosby also, and I was a Crosby.
You were not.
I was an honorary Crosby.
I was a Crosby groupie.
Ah.
I, like, dated Crosbys.
Really? Makes so much sense. By the way, these seven people listening that went to Binghamton will enjoy this part of the show.
We're going to have to put it up on Facebook. That's where I'm connected to all of my Crosby people.
We'll have to let Lois DeFleur know. Remember her? She was the president?
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
But the Crosbys.
Yeah, the Crosbys.
You were really Crosby?
I was an honorary Crosby because I played music for the Crosbys.
There was no music. It was a cappella.
I was like, no, but I was the guy that, like, if
how
they...
How you get a job? That's not really a
right,
job.
Right, right.
I'm like the instrument for the instrument-free band.
But, I mean, if they needed to, like, me to play the piano for something, yeah, I would always just chime in. And one of my best friends was the head of David Curry around the Crosbys and Mike Van Allen around the Crosbys. And we were all a little band. So I had a nickname. I was Crosby enough to be given a nickname. I was 88. Because I play piano and there's 88 kids in piano.
Uh-huh.
So I'm 88 whenever I do Crosby stuff.
You know, I have to call my college roommate after this.
Oh, for sure.
I'll be like, you can't believe it. I mean, we were all about the Crosby.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. Crosby.
I want some tapes.
Yes, they had cassette tapes.
The cassette tapes, right?
You were there when the campus pub was still around, too.
Yeah.
They got rid of that when I was a sophomore.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah, cancel culture came way early at Binghamton.
Oh, and I met Cesar Chavez.
Cesar Chavez came to Binghamton?
Of the grape boycott.
Oh, wow.
I boycotted grapes. Do you know why I boycotted grapes?
Because the California Raisins commercial stopped broadcasting?
No, because of the way the migrant workers were treated.
Oh.
So therefore, if I went into a restaurant and I was this kid, I would like the fruit salad, but does it have grapes?
Oh, boy. This was like the gluten-free of its time.
No, it was. I had morals, right? I was like, what do you mean it has grapes? Do you know what grapes do to people? Do you know what the migrant workers go through? So I was working on the grape boycott. I had sweatshirts and everything. And he came and he invited me to quit college and join his movement.
What would Twitter have done for you back then?
Oh, my gosh. I would be great on Twitter. Imagine me on Twitter then.
Boycott grapes. The great grape boycott.
Right?
This is the best part of when I interview people that, like, know what life was like in the 90s before the internet. And, like, how the hell did we get by and live? Oh, and yet we're better than ever.
Oh, can we play that? Like, card catalog.
Gen X therapy. This portion of the show is Gen X therapy.
Payphone.
Payphones, cords.
Oh,
tangled cords.
VCR.
VCRs. Laser discs.
Commodore 64.
Double deck cassette tapes.
When a microwave oven came, do you remember that?
AOL floppy disks.
Oh, floppy.
Sam Goody.
Blockbuster.
Blockbuster. Or pre Blockbuster, family run VCR rental stores.
Beta.
Betamax.
Mm-hmm.
Rubik's Cube.
What happened at midnight when the television went off?
Oh, the static?
And you got the static?
Or waiting at 5 a.m. for Captain Kangaroo to come on?
Yeah?
Yeah.
Stores being closed on Sundays?
That was really Jersey, though.
No, I was in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, but were those like the blue laws with the church? Yeah, there were no blue laws in New York City.
Okay,
they were losing all the money. We're heretics. We're total fucking heretics in New York City. Buy all you want on Sundays, folks. Everything's open.
One of my like first early 20s jobs was selling those car phones.
Oh, my God.
They were like this big.
Like the Sonny Crockett car phones from Miami
Vice. For like $1,000, right? And they got like hooked in and, yep.
The best thing is when you watch like YouTube videos of car phone ads in the 80s and 90s.
Okay, I feel like you've just named a whole night for us.
Yeah.
We're just going to have to watch these.
You could look at like car phone commercials on YouTube, and they're awesome. They're better than Zach Mars phones. Like I think there was a car phone in like Wall Street with Michael Douglas.
Yeah?
Yeah. Like that's what life was like.
Yeah.
There was a car phone in like Trading Places. I don't know. I'm going way back.
Remember going to the airport all the way?
Yeah.
As an event,
did everybody you pack your bags?
Walked you to the gate.
No, I didn't pack my bags. Fine, go on, enjoy, have fun. Remember in Airplane, was it Airplane 2, Sonny Bono bought a bomb in the deli? I'll take the first time I'm on the left. Sure, here you go.
Here you go.
Things that have not aged well across 40 years of media. So where did you grow up?
Philadelphia.
So what was life like for you in Philadelphia besides Rocky Balboa?
Well, that was it, right? So I grew up in like the first neighborhood out of Philadelphia, like the first family. There's this big developer called Toll Brothers, which you see as...
I know, the Nestle Toll Brothers.
Yeah, only I grew up
they're real estate people too.
Toll Drive.
No way.
Their first road.
Did it smell like chocolate?
125 Toll Drive.
Was it paved with chocolate?
It was, but okay. That's another story.
Okay, great. Okay. I had to make sure you were living in the right neighborhood.
So yeah, no, it was like super suburbia, like, and we were latchkey kids. Remember, like when that was okay.
Mm-hmm.
Like literally,
latchkey. That's another '80s thing.
Yeah, yeah. You had a key around. Like I wore a key.
Yeah.
To school because we had keys on the door, right? I wore a key, and then I like let my sister in, and we watched Flintstones.
And you'd walk home, and no one would know where you were.
Yes, we would walk home.
Get home when the lights turned on. Curfew was when the street lights turned on.
I know.
Or like in my neighborhood on Staten Island, like every mother would yell out the door, Frankie, Maddie, Scotty. And like we'd all just come running in our bikes like E.T. style. Right. Simpler days, different days. Different better, but also different worse for many people.
Yeah, different.
Different worse for many, many people. But definitely, oh my God, we could really appreciate simpler things. Helicopter moms kind of didn't exist. We ate dirt and our immune systems worked.
Yeah, I'm still pro dirt.
I'm pro dirt.
I really am. I'm like, you know, I feel like.
Pro dirt. Today's episode is sponsored by sod. Like we should get like Scott's brand lawn crap to sponsor the show.
Exactly. Hashtag pro dirt.
Well, one of George Carlin's best bits was like, whatever happened to sticks?
Oh my gosh, I love George Carlin.
We used to play with sticks.
He was brilliant. He was
stoop
brilliant.
Ball, right? Sticks. Yeah.
Right.
Occupying our time.
When there was no cell phones and internet. And so I mean, I was like a visionary.
You were ahead of your time.
I was on Toll Road. On Toll Drive. So I sat down. I was doing a paper on solar energy.
That really was ahead of your time.
I was. Wait till you hear. So I sat down on my Commodore 64.
Now, I had that as well.
Okay. For those who are younger than we are and do not know, there was no internet. It was not connected to anything. It was a box with a screen.
A black and white screen. Plug,
a black and white screen. Okay. But no, me, I sat down and put in solar energy run.
Really?
I did.
And what happened? Did the solar energy run?
Nothing happened.
Okay, great.
It was dramatic. But you see how I was a visionary?
I did a third grade.
Solar energy.
I did a third grade project on the bald eagle.
Oh.
They were back when they used to be endangered.
Right.
And thanks to me and my third grade project, today the bald eagle is not endangered. You're welcome, kids.
Oh, exactly. So I did a poetry contest for the Tay-Sachs Foundation and had everybody write poems.
Hashtag Jews. Thank you, Tay-Sachs. Thank you, genetics. We'll get to genetics at the later part of the show.
But the Jewish part, we'll go all in.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I did that in fifth grade. And I started a camp for economically underprivileged children from inner city Philadelphia when I was 15.
You were way ahead of your time.
Solar energy run.
That's very impressive.
Need I say more?
On a 64K little computer that you probably got at Toys R Us. All right, my last sentiment here is my favorite commercial of the 80s was the Toys R Us Christmas commercial. Do you remember this one? It's a Toys R Us time of year. You know, it's all about snowflakes and winter and Jeffrey the Giraffe. And anyway.
And you felt like the world would be good.
We're going to find a clip of that.
And then do toys for Cars for Kids.
No, no, Cars for Kids.
1-800-CARS-FOR-KIDS.
Fuck those people. Cars for Kids. I don't know what the fuck that is. Don't ever say that. You must leave the studio now.
Okay, I'm leaving.
That's anathema to this show. So you led a really interesting life pre-healthcare landing on you.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about the 2000s. I mean, you're a media person. It's so rare to meet people that are in media that know what media used to be.
So, like, right, I had trouble when the whole YouTube thing happened and all because I honestly, before that, I had a makeup team and a lighting team and a camera guy. And right. I was like, I don't understand. I'm supposed to be the talent and do all this stuff.
Right.
Like, I was so confused. But yeah, like old time, like real TV, like Today Show, CNN, like regular television live.
What's that word again? Live?
Live. Like I was live to 10 million.
That's amazing.
Yeah. My grandmother thought so.
That's all you need. That's all you need. The approval
and,
of one.
And I was a publisher of a newspaper and Wannabe Magazine. And I produced for a bunch of the ABC and wrote.
Back when people trusted the news.
Well, it was after Nixon. So
it was also after the Fairness Doctrine was destroyed.
Yeah.
But I think more trust but back then because there was less noise.
It was a big deal for sure.
Yeah.
Like it was a big deal. Like I'd be like, oh, I was on the Today Show. Like that was a big deal.
Right.
You know, like, oh, CNN needs me. Like.
But there was a lot more, I would say, structure and intention and less histrionics back then on what they were reporting on and how they built stories.
Oh, for sure. There was actually research done and actually building of stories and actually production. I mean, I loved it. I loved it. I just sort of like I was at this fork in the road, which I was at many times in my life between business, a.k.a. money, and media, a.k.a. fame and fulfillment. And every time I kind of hit that fork, I chose the business side. I recently made a decision that I was going to go the other way. See, everybody's missing my hand motions.
Right. But yeah, you can't do that on the radio.
They're exciting hand motions.
She's gesticulating appropriately.
Exactly. Thank you. I produced. I was on air. I had a podcast before everybody was doing podcasts on Blog Talk Radio.
It's funny you say Blog Talk Radio. So in 2006... I was just getting ready to start Stupid Cancer. I just had met my bald Jewish Binghamton friend named Craig, who happened to be on the board of a very powerful policy group called the National Coalition for Cancer Survivorship. And they were like this amazing influencer. They worked on CHIP with Clinton and all the Medicare, everything. They are the place. They were the place. And I was kind of like mentored by the leadership there, the late Ellen Stovall and some other people. And there was a nonprofit that was called Vital Options. They had a terrestrial AM show that they toted around all the cancer conferences and broadcast from live. You know, there's that word again.
Live.
So they were approached by a very nascent early streaming company. This is when people were still on dial-up and DSL called Now Live. And it was basically positioned as online streaming voice blogging. Those are words we put together. Right. The word salad of 06 was online talk radio blog streaming.
Right.
Like before vlogging became blogging, the next word after right. that. And pre-YouTube, pre-Google, pre-Facebook, pre-everything. Maybe Friendster was a thing back then. So they handed me the microphone and I built the whole Stupid Cancer Show, launched on May 28th, 07. And that's when it was live.
Right.
8 to 9 Mondays for 2 years. And then finally, Blog Talk Radio showed up and said, we would like to turn your live show into a podcast.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, what the fuck is a podcast? Like the iPod? Yeah, sure. I mean, there was only Apple Podcasts back then. iHeart hadn't gotten into it. There was no Spotify. That was the only place to listen was on iPhones. And or on iPads, I think, were in 08 when iPads launched, 2010 when iPads launched, whatever it was. So I technically had the first podcast on Apple Podcasts ranting about healthcare and stupid cancer and all sorts of bullshit. But to their credit, Blog Talk Radio was kind of very innovative for its time.
My stuff's still up. I'm theoretically working on my sizzle reel. So I'm like Googling myself because I never Google myself.
You know what that's called? There's a word for that.
Narcissism?
Ego surfing.
Ego surfing.
Yes.
Okay.
You were ego surfing.
Okay. So I was doing it to pull up, put all the stuff in of like, and all of my Blog Talk radio shows are still up. I did over 60 shows, and one of them has been made into a movie. It's coming out on Netflix.
All right. So I'm going to mic drop right. No. That was a mic drop, but we have to take a break.
Okay.
Because I think this is going to be like an extended cut episode of Out of Patience. We'll be right back with Gail Zotz.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
All right, so we have the Binghamton, Wegmans, Montgomery Ward, Crosby's connection.
Crosby's, Murray Street, yes.
We have...
The Crosby's is real, though.
Yeah.
That's like...
No, I'm seeing it.
Yeah,
listeners, I'm seeing this. She's pulsating. It's exciting. And we have the media background, the advertising background. We have the radio background.
Yeah.
And thanks to Shit Happens, we have the cancer background. So I want to mic drop this here live on the show. I did you a favor. So the saga of Gail has been very well documented, but I feel like there's a YouTube video that really sums it up the best. And I found the video of you telling your story in a very compassionate, very energizing way, as you do. So I decided to get you a birthday present because yesterday was your birthday as of this taping. I registered the domain thesagaofgale.com. That's G-A-L-E, like a gale of wind. So if you go to thesagaofgale.com, it goes to that YouTube channel, to that video of you telling your saga.
Which one?
I don't know.
Just one of them.
One of the many.
I love this.
So just to let you know here on Live on the Air.
Can we make shirts?
We can make shirts.
The
saga of Gail.com. Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Wait, I can redirect it any way you want.
This is the best birthday present ever.
Yeah.
This is so exciting.
So the saga of Gail.com is now your website. It can go anywhere you want. But I could not. I mean, we could spend 7 hours going through your saga.
We could.
But the dime store tour pretty much is it was a lot of shit piled on top of a lot of shit, deep fried in more shit. And then wrapped in a chalupa.
With some special sauce.
Taco Bell, not a sponsor. So what's the dime store tour of Gail Cancer 101?
Gail Cancer. So I was getting sick. I was getting sicker.
How? What does that mean? Just like you vomited one day?
No, I stopped being able to walk.
That's a thing.
It's a thing. But, you know, they kind of treated me like it was in my head.
You were in your 30s or 40s?
I was in my... early 40s. I think my 40th birthday, I was just getting into a wheelchair. That was my 40th birthday.
So you just
present.
Couldn't walk?
Yeah, no. My legs just kept going out on me. And I was in a lot of
pain. Did your doctor think you had like sciatica or something?
You know, so the neurosurgeon said I had bad luck.
That's the best diagnosis ever.
That was his official diagnosis. And early on, I said, you know, maybe we should do a mammogram. And I'm like, you're way too young for a mammogram.
They didn't do that back then. The guidelines didn't go down to 40 yet.
I was too young. I was too young for the guidelines. Woo!
So much for the guidelines.
So I was really being able to do less and less, particularly over the course of a year. And I was getting, say, I went into the hospital. I was in the hospital. But this is like sort of like healthcare weird thinking. It was Labor Day weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So you can follow this. I agreed to go into the hospital because I figure it's Labor Day weekend. They're going to like get me out. They're not going to want to keep me to do more tests because Labor Day weekend. The staff.
So you're banking on staycations.
That's what I was.
Okay.
I was like, I'll be able to leave. And they said, you know, you're just getting sicker and sicker. We don't know what's wrong with you. So you should go to hospice.
On like day two? Like,
yeah. I'm like, no.
It's like a Tinder date from hell.
they're like, well, you know, it'd be good to like write letters to your kids. And I'm a single mom of four. Right. Like, and they come in. So they bring a psychiatrist. We have like an hour visit where he's trying to get me to accept my situation.
But they're not even trying to figure out what's wrong with you?
No. It was like done.
Were you at like Joe's Cancer Shack in Spokane or something? Where were you?
They were like, they totally gave up on me. Like, and they didn't know what was wrong with
like
me at
Bradley's
all.
Bradley's or Caldor Cancer Center?
So then they brought in security to like push me in like a wheelchair. They're like, miss, you really have to get in. I'm like, you can't touch me. Ha ha, you can't touch me. I did a sit-in in the hospital.
That's amazing.
And then like at 6 days, and I'm like alone. And at like 6 days, you know, the bed utilization person said, get her out. So my winning ticket was to a basement of a one-star skilled nursing facility.
That sounds like Milton from Office Space.
There was like mold. This is not a euphemism. There was mold pouring down from the ceiling.
You were literally in like a cancer dungeon.
It was, you know, they didn't even put walls up. It was like basement, cinder blocks.
That's
and everything.
Terrible. Oh my God.
Like alone. I was completely alone.
Are you at liberty to say where this was?
I was in Minnesota.
Okay.
In St. Louis Park.
Okay.
So, here's the thing.
This might be just the worst story ever. There are a lot of bad stories, but this might be the worst story ever.
You know me. I don't go halfway. So.
Go big or go home, Gail.
Go big or go home.
SagaofGail.com.
But aren't you wondering, did I know I had cancer? I did not. They left me in the nursing home to die without knowing why I would die. 3 weeks after I'm there, scheduling calls me. And they're like, okay, we got you in with the next oncologist. I said, oncologist? You mean I have cancer? She's like, no one told you?
Right.
I got my diagnosis from a scheduling person in India.
That's worse than Carrie Bradshaw being like dumped on a post-it note.
So, you know, I go in and I meet with, I had a palliative team.
Right.
So I had.
Wait, so you're in a dungeon.
I'm in a dungeon.
You get notified.
In an electric wheelchair.
Like stamps.com sent you a fax.
Yes.
That you have cancer.
From scheduling.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And I go in and, you know, surprise, it was stage four.
How many months after your like first I can't walk was this?
So it was a while. I mean, I was definitely using a wheelchair by 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And this was already 2016.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, this was a lot of doctors thinking
it was
in my
head.
It was
in a single part of this that's okay.
No, they thought it was in my head. I mean, they like treated me as if it was all like in my head.
You know, that's another thing you said, because at one point I was misdiagnosed for so long and they actually told me, we think this is all in your head. You know what? It's a fucking brain tumor.
Right.
It was in
it
my
is
head.
In your head!
Yeah. Yes. Congratulations, Captain Obvious.
Yeah. No, I mean, that whole time they were like treating me like it was a mental illness or something.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Oh, God, that's
yeah.
the worst.
I'm telling you, I got to tell you, honestly, when I got the cancer diagnosis, I was like, yes, because
there's actually something wrong with you.
There's actually something wrong with me. I haven't made it up for 6 years.
I know. It's the oddest cathartic like realization.
It was the best. And fine. It wasn't my fault.
Right.
It wasn't like cancer that I'd caused from like bad living or something like that.
Right, right.
Like it was completely like.
I mean, if you were like wallowing in sewage for 6 months and got cancer, okay, I did that to myself. I will not wallow in sewage or nuclear waste. But here you are.
No, yeah.
I did nothing to make this happen.
No, which was like a relief because 6 years of being told that, and I didn't even realize it was that long. I had to think when you asked me.
Right. Like, I mean, I had very similar when they said you actually have a mass in your head. I'm like, fucking finally, there's something. I'm so happy there's a mass in my head. Yes! I'm not crazy.
Yes.
And then I'm like, there's a fucking mass in my head.
Right. Get it out.
We'll get it out.
Get it out.
Please take it out of me.
Right. Yeah. Right. So, of course, mine were, you know, shockingly too big to operate.
Okay.
And metastasized. Okay. And, you know, like going into the lymph nodes and under like my arm and going up my brain. And
so you said the full deluxe car wash afterwards?
I wanted the whole thing.
Yeah.
So I had 10 months of, but when I met with them, I said, you need to know I'm like going to live.
Right.
They didn't believe me at all.
Okay.
But they wrote it down.
So now we get into the how dying are you portion of the podcast.
Right.
I was basically told maybe a week after my surgery that I had a 20% chance to survive the surgery. So like, well, we'll tell you now.
Right.
Now that you're alive. Right. It's like Han Solo's like, never tell me the odds. They didn't tell me the odds until I survived it. And then they're like, well, let's see if you're here in 6 months. Right. And then like, oh, let's see if you're here in 5 years. So it got exponential. And eventually my oncologist like, you're definitely dying of something else. Leave me alone. I'm like, done. What was your version of that?
That I'm dying. That was it. Right. They wanted like that I would never be cancer free.
Mm-hmm.
They said, you will never be cancer free.
And those are famous last words for good reasons.
Yeah. Yeah. They didn't think I would survive at all. Right. That's the whole idea with hospice. Mm-hmm. You go and you die comfortably.
Is that still a misperception? Hospice means you're dying immediately, or is hospice like we're just going to try to make everything good while we can? Is it an inevitability metaphor, or is it like we're just going to make this better for you while you're on treatment?
So I think the palliative team, which I would literally did so much for, like I am so happy I had a palliative team.
Right.
I don't think people realize how much a palliative team does. They think palliative teams are only for hospice.
Okay.
So hospice is usually like the location where you go, or you have hospice at home.
Final chapter kind of stuff.
But a palliative team, who are the same doctors and nurses and social workers who treat hospice, they're amazing.
Right.
I mean, they deal with medication and therapy and meditation and spiritual. Like, I loved my hospice team. Still my therapist. All these years later was my therapist.
Anything is better than the Milton Office Space dungeon that you were in.
No. So literally. So like jail. I mean, they came
cancer,
in.
Cancer.
You know, I was in cancer jail.
I can't believe we're using these words. Okay.
But it's us. It's okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So because I was in healthcare and I had like all these notions, I wanted to put sensory things in my room. Right. I'm in a basement, like concrete, right. No windows, like
Shawshank,
literally
prison.
Right.
Yeah.
Prison. So I think I'll bring sensories like color and scents and textures and all these things that have evidence, like literal evidence to show that it helps.
Right.
So so I brought like some stuff in. I went in my wheelchair, like, you know, went in my electric wheelchair and like went out and got some stuff like to have like some seating, like blow up. Like soft things and all of that.
Right.
And they came in, three people, and they said that I was breaking the fire code regulations.
So no soup for you.
That, well, not only that, they turned over my bed.
What?
They did a room check like what you do in jail.
Right.
They turned over my mattress.
Contraband.
Okay. Yes, for contraband. My contraband was sensory things
to
help me in my recovery offset not having to use drugs.
This wasn't Shawshank. This was Attica.
Okay. But this is not a metaphor. They came in. Now, they had to lift me off my bed to put me onto a wheelchair so they could turn over my bed.
That's a hell of a story.
They bust
And why don't you have a book yet?
This year.
Or you're on Netflix
year.
Series?
No, this year. The book, the TED Talk, and then we'll talk to Netflix.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. All right, we're going to take another break because, oh my God, we deserve another segment. We're not going anywhere. Stay tuned, folks. We'll be right back. All right, the saga of Gale.com, for those still inquisitive about how this really dragged out for you, is well documented across the internet these days. I want to spend the rest of the show talking about how you're channeling like this, what the fuck just happened to me, to, like we say, pay it forward, the cat poster shit. But like, you are all over the fucking place in a very precision way, triggering all the right people to do very different things. And we're going to conspire immediately following the show for the next like 20 years on fixing shit, whatever fixing means. But I want to get your thoughts on this one sentence. I was told by a guy named David Contorno, who basically helped build Medicare during Clinton era, that healthcare is not broken. It is fixed and working as planned. It is the job of the American voter to break it. How do you feel about that?
To break it?
Yes.
I don't understand. Wait, is this like a weird trick sentence?
No.
Healthcare is not broken.
I'll say it this way. The American healthcare system is not broken. It is working exactly according to plan. The only way to make it better for people that need it is to break it.
Okay. So you know, the issue is, right, it's about the transactions.
It's about many transactions. Not being thrown in cancer jail, for one.
Yeah, that's not awesome, folks.
No,
it's not awesome. But at the core, I feel like we all kind of have to hang our hat on something, right? We go through something crazy and we're like, oh, this is the thing either I'm going to blame or I'm going to fix or I'm going to believe in.
Right.
You know?
Well, there's such a, like, it's like a pointillist painting, right? There's so many little dots that make up a big picture.
Yeah.
So have you settled on one specific thing that you are making a big stink about?
So on the business side, it's value-based care.
Okay.
I
Which
think
is
we have
what?
To end what? The transactions.
For the idiots like me, what the hell is value-based care?
That we, right now, it's paid mostly healthcare on fee-for-service, which is a transaction of sickness.
Okay.
That's a Gail Zotzism, transaction of sickness.
A Zotzism,
but you can use
Abyssal
it.
Abyssal Zotzism?
But you can use it.
Okay.
Okay, so you're walking on the sidewalk, you fall down, you break your arm.
Right.
And it has to get fixed. The doctor gets paid to set the arm, gets paid to wrap it, gets paid for your physical therapy for each transaction that occurred because you were sick.
Okay, makes sense.
Only, therefore, the only way they will help you is when you're sick.
Right.
Because otherwise there's no financial incentive. Value-based care.
Well, I guess then the doctor could like hit you with a bat. And then fix the problem they caused.
The American voter.
Yes.
Breaking the...
I'm going to generate just a business, Doc.
We got to keep that roar.
Yeah.
What was that? Like, as she roars. So value-based care pays like a subscription.
Okay.
And says, use it and do good. But really, if there's a financial incentive, therefore, for you no longer to be sick, to fix the sidewalk... So that you don't fall.
So like,
because
it's basically
ends up being
like
cheaper.
Like, it ends up being, don't sew the wound, don't get the wound.
Yeah, you don't get the wound.
Right.
You actually stop people from getting sepsis and C. diff. How many of us had that? All hands. We did.
She raised 20 fingers.
She raised them all up. You know, like, so I say it's like sneaking in good healthcare.
Right.
Because when it makes sense financially and there's more profit at the end, then nobody cares that I'm saying, let's give transportation, let's send food, let's fix the electricity so that they can keep their medication at home. All the things that you and I know are right.
But I mean, can you break it down into two main buckets, which is like shit that's fairly okay to deal with, like a broken arm versus like cancer care?
So they actually started, some of the bundles started with more complex things like big falls and end-stage renal disease.
What about shit you live with?
Yeah, like, so...
Like hepatitis or multiple sclerosis or endometriosis. Like, if it's not, there's no, you break your arm, you fix it, that's a transaction.
Right.
What if there's no end to the transactions?
But that's how they're paid, is continually for your transactions. So therefore, each time, that's when they get paid.
So who pays them? Medicare?
Well, Medicare pays for Medicare people.
What about employer-based care? How do you mandate standards across every company's different employer-based benefits?
So, you know, it's interesting because 60%...
Was that a good question?
Look, I was excited to answer.
Okay, okay. I want to make sure I'm asking the right questions.
Why? There's no wrong
The role
questions.
Of Matthew today is armchair idiot.
No, it's... Okay, so let me tell you the truth. I do this like all day long. People who even have the title don't really understand what it is. Like,
have we met? And you are?
Little cancer fog?
Yes. Where am I? What day is it?
No, like this is part of what I do is just trying to simplify it. Because when you simplify it, my children are able to tell their other friends at school and in a really simple way where they say, oh, fee-for-service is really stupid. Why are we doing healthcare that way?
Right.
It actually can be very simple.
I've always asked the question, who profits the most from making it better for consumers?
So that's such a good question. So in a value-based care model, then everybody profits by making it better for consumers. That is one of the reasons why I love it.
Okay.
So imagine fee-for-service, you doctor, nurse, whomever, get paid every time somebody's sick, every time they need a service, right? But in value-based contracting, you get paid the same amount whether the person needs the hospital or doesn't need the hospital. So all of a sudden, you're paid the same amount whether you go into the hospital or not. Your doctors and health systems make the same.
Wait, so walk me through a scenario. I'm going to primary care because my eye is bleeding, right?
So in the best solution, you'd be going to primary care every year because that's what we do.
Okay.
Is go to primary care and everybody would start going to primary care.
Well, why can't we do that?
That's part of it.
Okay.
Value-based care only works when primary care is at the core of it.
And telehealth is a whole other show we can do about making primary care a little more accessible, right?
Yes, which is, so that's the other thing with value, is that it doesn't matter where it's delivered.
Right.
See, when it's a contractual service transaction, you have to go to the hospital or go to the clinic to receive the service. Because when they bill, they say was done at hospital. And there's a number for that.
So it really is like going to a store and buying something.
That is.
Except I'm not paying for it.
That's the business of healthcare, but somebody is.
Right.
But somebody's paying for it every time you go.
Right.
With value-based contracting, the health system gets paid the same amount of money every month, whether you get your visit on the phone for 5 minutes or whether you have to go into the hospital. So therefore, what do you think they're incentivized to do?
Send you to the hospital.
No.
No,
because
send you home?
Then they get to save all that money.
Oh, so if they don't send you to the hospital,
they can keep it.
They keep their, basically it's like a dividend.
Yes.
Okay.
Whereas with regular fee for service, they have to get you into the hospital.
Okay.
No matter how much they say they're against preventable readmissions, they're not.
Was that what that is? Like not needing to go to the hospital or going anyway?
In fee for service, people do it because that's the only place they're going to get paid. So they tell you to come into the hospital.
Okay, I get it.
But if your doctor's getting paid the same amount for you, he can pick up the phone, meet you at Starbucks, go to your house.
That's a good doctor.
Yes, it's a value-based care doctor.
Right.
I mean, that's what's happening in our country. There's whole value-based groups where they only go to the house.
I think we need a better name than value-based.
We do. We do need a good name.
It's like consumer fix my fucking shit.
Yeah, no, it's really... I know that we all have to hang our hat on something, and I'm not saying but to me, it's the underlying problem. I go under the assumption that people are not bad people or more like that it's not it's because it's their only financial incentive.
What's the opposite of value-based care?
Is there fee-for-service?
Fee-for-service. Mm-hmm. That's where they're incentivized to do as many tests as possible,
yes,
whether necessary or not.
That is over 70% of our healthcare system today.
So what is going to disincentivize them from that profit motive?
Making it super uncomfortable for them to continue fee-for-service as opposed to moving to value-based care. So, for example, physicians got a 20% pay cut this year.
Across the board?
Across the board.
That's bad.
It's big.
Okay.
So
I mean, it sounds bad.
Yeah, so
coming out of your mouth, I believe it's bad.
And CMS, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services,
right,
basically was like, we told you, you're too comfortable in fee-for-service.
Right.
We don't want you to be comfortable. Because if you get uncomfortable, if you realize that you can no longer profit the same way, then you're going to move to value-based contracting.
At the end of the day, is this like a legislative, civil activist, we're going to vote our way to make this a thing?
Yes. So it's the core of the ACA, The Affordable Care Act was built not only to give people access to insurance, but to move people towards value-based contracting.
And that's not happened in 12 years because?
Well, so it's been happening. So what happened was the ACA created something called CMMI, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation, mm-hmm. which is like an incubator.
Okay.
It's a funded incubator that says we're going to fund companies trying to do alternative payment models, who try to figure out how to do it with value-based contracting and do a better job. The goals being to improve the outcomes of a whole population, to make the experience better for the patient, consumer, and to lower the total cost of care. Some people call it the triple aim. Those are the big goals.
It sounds nice on paper, right? I'm still stuck on the how are you convincing people that they just need to be made uncomfortable?
So CMMI has these models. You've seen like over 50 of them have been out. At the end of the day, I mean, the short answer is it'll be mandatory.
Okay.
I mean, it's going to be made mandatory.
That's what I'm saying. Like without mandates, legislative mandate. Okay.
So CMS right now is saying 2030, 100% of everybody's going to have to be on value. We'll see. But it's definitely not only is becoming mandatory, but to your earlier question about employers.
Right.
60% of everybody who has insurance has an employer self-pay plan.
Right.
Which is where the.
Which are mostly people under 45 that will never be anywhere near Medicare.
Yeah. The head of that association, I was at the announcement this year, and she said, we're not waiting for CMS. We're going ahead and negotiating value contracts right now.
Okay.
So you're also going to see more of it with these sort of like retail, you know, the Amazons, and you're going to see a lot more where.
So the Fortune 5000 companies will be switching to this.
Yes.
Okay.
And so it's
based on mandate or based on like economic benefit?
They're doing it based on economic benefits, okay. Which is what's interesting is that everybody has been waiting for the mandate from CMS to occur permanent. And the private sector is saying we're not even waiting.
All right. So we're getting toward the end of this is easily like the saga of Gail version one of this show. You're coming back.
Like that was so quick.
Many, many times. That was been 45 minutes. This has been like a fabulous nothing. Conversation. It's got to keep happening. But I'm always going to be like the cockeyed pessimist with this crap because I really look at, and this is not an apples to apples, like what Ralph Nader did in the 60s was convince the insurance companies to pay for the fucking seatbelts and then everybody wins because it cost them less to just pay for the fucking seatbelts as a standard in the country. Then cover all the claims of people dying.
Right.
Right. Is there a version of that today? Is that this?
Yes.
Okay.
Right. And we see it with all kinds of legislation, the No Surprise Act that has made it really, really expensive.
The hospital billing shit, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
It's all part of the same thing.
Okay. All right. So what can a listener do? We have a grillion people listening to the show.
A grillion?
A grillion.
You have a grillion people?
It's
I want a grillion people.
All right, I'm exaggerating because I'm Jewish and insecure with a low self-esteem. But yeah, I feel like it's an opportunity to invite people that listen to this show to not have some sterile lawyer-driven agency shit to listen to and just hear people that are this is new to me. I'm outside this wheelhouse that you've been living in for 12 years
no,
at this point.
No, it's great.
Now,
how am I doing it explaining it, though? Do you feel like you're...
I'm getting a better sense, but I live at the intersection of if this really is going to come down to a mandate and Congress and some kind of act, what can listeners do to get involved in that level of legislative activism? Or is there even a thing to do yet?
So it's interesting because the Progressive Caucus tried to shut it down this year. And I don't think they understood because value-based contracting actually serves the underserved the most.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens is this is so complicated that you're given a soundbite and then the soundbite ends up being not accurate.
Which is like the worst use of media today.
Yeah. The soundbite they gave was it was to privatize Medicare, which is
right.
Just it's not accurate, but it was the soundbite that everybody went with. So
we really need Andy Rooney back.
Yeah. Where is he?
Well, you work for 60 minutes. So we need Andy Rooney back. Go resurrect him.
I was very young and very behind the scenes.
Like we need the Andy Rooney button.
I know.
He makes sense of he made sense of everything.
Yeah.
So is there a bill in the House?
So
is there
something
like where can people go? What does this mean today?
Yeah. So I mean there needs to be and something that I keep saying I need to do, there needs to be a place where people can get it simply because right now the It's like 2,000 pages of stuff to have to read. So
always a fun little romp in the hay to read through a bill.
The other is that a lot of times your insurance or your physicians may offer this. So you can ask.
Right.
Is there, like, you know, depending on what your insurance is. But I think the short answer to this is we should do this. I should put something out there so that people can go.
SagaofGale.com/go-do-something.
Go do something.
Not a website yet.
But it will be.
That's where I'm landing at here is like we have the capacity to reach a ton of people on every episode and even the other shows on our network and our big documentary series and our narrative series. There's a lot of people listening cross-network. We've had over 1.8 million downloads in 2 years. That's a lot of people listening to our network. And if we would hit like a big red button where one ad ran on every show every day and they could go all one place to do one thing and we channel like this massive influx of pissed off American voters fucked by healthcare, what could they do? We can work on that.
So you know what? I'm going to take this and this is like going to be the thing that I'm going to think on. So before this airs, we're going to have an answer.
Before this airs?
We're going to have an answer.
Okay, fine. How's it feel to keep having birthdays?
I like birthdays.
Yeah.
Right?
They're good. I'm 39 forever.
You know, Mother's Day is 5 years for me.
Congratulations. I mean, again, 5 years for me was 2001. January 10th, 01 was 5 years for me. And again, this was like in 95, 96, where they said, if you make it 5 years, you'll be fine. And today it's like, you know, just take it day by day or here's survivorship or we're not really measuring by 5 years anymore. And I remember like just literally sweating my ass off every single day for 5 years, hoping I would live for 5 years. Do you have that outside of the whole like how am I still here factor? Did they tell you like you'll be dead in 5 years?
Yes.
They did.
I mean, 100% everybody said I would not live to the 5 years.
Yeah.
Like it was not even part of the plan. It was, do you want to stay on chemotherapy until you die or you want to go off chemotherapy and die? Like it was never get to 5 years. It was... That was never part of the conversation.
Well, the rumors of Gail Zott's death have been greatly exaggerated.
But I know if you didn't show up for the funeral.
Yes, you really would. You really would. All right. Clearly the first of many, many engagements to come on the show here. Gail Zott is a five-year survivor of stage four breast cancer. He also is survivor of the Shawshank Cancer Prison. And... amongst the many, you'll be dead in 5 hours club.
Yeah.
And the Binghamton Club and the Crosby Club and the Wegmans Club.
Right?
Fantastic. And the Morley Safer and Andy Rooney Club.
We have a lot of clubs.
Wait, and the Blog Talk Radio Club.
I'm really excited.
There's a lot of clubs.
We could make like a club collection.
Yes. So you're the founder and CEO of Wise Care Health. We'll get to another show for Wise Care Health.
That's a whole other conversation.
But again, the sagaofgail.com will link you to a YouTube video that she really does go through. The entire musings and extemporaneous housings of her travails. It was a pleasure to see you in person, to have you on the show, and we are mishpach for life.
Yes.
That's all for now. If you like the show, be sure to subscribe, leave a review on Apple Podcasts, follow us on social, and tell all your friends to listen. Tell us what you'd like Matthew to cover in his next episode by leaving a message for us at 855-AUDIO-66, and we might just use it in a future show. Out of Patients is a product of Offscript Health. We are a healthcare engagement company built for patients and caregivers by patients and caregivers. Our executive producers are Matthew Zachary and Andrew McDowell. Our senior producer is Betsy Shepherd. Our host is Matthew Zachary. It is recorded, mixed, and edited by Betsy Shepherd. For advertising and media inquiries, email media@offscript.com. That's media@offscript.com. For more information, visit offscript.com.